I'm Jeff Robinson, and you're listening to City Views. The death of a snowboarder last week was the latest fatality attributed to an avalanche, and dangerous conditions remain in the backcountry. Joining me now to talk about staying safe in the backcountry is Bruce Trimper. He's director of the Forest Service Utah Avalanche Center. And Bruce, thanks so much for your time. It's good to have you.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Bruce, tell us about this latest, you know, avalanche fatality that occurred and the underlying reasons for what happened.
Well, it happened outside the Canyons Resort, the backcountry, as we call it. Mm-hmm. So it's an area where there's no avalanche control with explosives. So inside the ski area boundaries, they keep it very, very safe. But outside the ski area boundaries, it's like stepping back into the Stone Age. There's nobody doing any avalanche control with explosives out there. Mm-hmm. So people can go into the backcountry. I mean, it's public land, national forest. It's one of the best deals we've ever gotten as Americans, is our own public land, because we all own it. We can go there anytime we want to. But the flip side is that there's lions and tigers and bears and avalanches. So you need to know what you're doing. So a lot of folks who spend most of their time at the resort, you know, you get kind of habituated that everything is safe. So it's pretty hard to make that mental switch when you go across that line, even though you have to go past the signs and everything, to make that mental switch that things are actually dangerous. So folks do go into the backcountry, and some people do it safely, and some people get into trouble. These folks went into terrain that was a little bit too steep and triggered an avalanche and had unfortunate consequences.
How many avalanche deaths have there been this season so far, then?
There's been 4 deaths.
And is that, how does that compare, you know, the number of injuries and deaths so far to 2011?
We are on average for Utah, 4 is our average, and last year, I believe we had 3. I kind of lose track, all the years blend together, sorry. Mm-hmm.
And so, Bruce, obviously the weather this year has been very unique, you know, with the low amount of precipitation. I'm curious how that affects avalanche conditions. Does it have a noticeable impact, the fact that the precipitation has just been so few and far between?
Yeah, this is an extremely unusual year for Utah. We're about 50% of average right now. And what happens is that thin snow means weak snow. It's just the opposite of what most people think. The less it snows, actually, the more dangerous it is, because of what we call temperature gradient metamorphism. So big word alert here. when the snowpack is thin, there's a big temperature gradient or a big difference in temperature in the snowpack, and that metamorphoses all the crystals into weak, sugary crystals that just can't support any weight. And so the whole bottom part of our snowpack, the bottom 2 feet of the snowpack, is just very, very weak snow, and it just can't support too much weight. And then now we have a bunch of heavy, dense snow on top of it. It's kind of like putting a brick on top of a pile of potato chips. So that was the problem that we've had for the last month or so, and now we're getting deep enough snow in the Wasatch Range anyway, so we're starting to get several layers. So some of those shallower layers are breaking out as avalanches like they did last week, and then they step down into deeper weak layers sometimes. So we've seen lots of different kinds of avalanches. In the Uinta Mountains, where the snowpack is still weak, it's still very, very unstable and very fragile. And last few days, it's just been coming apart in the Uintas, just avalanches everywhere. Every time the wind blows there, you get lots and lots of avalanches.
And so do you expect it to get a little bit worse as the season goes on? If precipitation picks up, does that mean more heavy snow burdened on top of this weak snowpack?
Yeah, with these kind of weak layers, I should say, since there's a number of different ones, every time you load it with new weight, it reactivates these weak layers. They can kind of sleep in between the storms sometimes. And then when you load it up with weight, they start avalanching again. And snow is just like people. It doesn't like rapid changes. So anytime you give it a rapid change, especially the addition of weight, then you reactivate the avalanches.
And so there at the Utah Avalanche Center, you do a number of things to warn people about the avalanche danger. How do you measure that? Does it involve going out in the snow with a ruler? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, we do a number of things. All of our staff rotate through the office, and we do field work. So spend about third of our time doing field work, going out skiing or snowmobiling mm-hmm. around and digging holes in the snow. It's a lot less glamorous than you would think. yesterday was a good day. Just spent a lot of time digging on fracture lines and holes in the snow. That's what I was doing yesterday. And we're testing the snow, looking at the weak layers, seeing how much additional stress it takes to make them break out. So, and then we go into the office. We rotate through the office as well. The forecaster that's in the office gets in about 4 o'clock in the morning, and all of our products are out by about 8 o'clock in the morning, including our interview here at KCPW every day.
Yes, and the avalanche report you can hear at 8:10 every weekday morning here on KCPW. Have you ever been caught in an avalanche yourself, Bruce? I'm curious.
Yeah, I've been caught a couple times. Most avalanche professionals have a close call once in a while. So luckily, I've had a couple of relatively minor close calls. Been buried to my waist once or twice.
And so the ones that are less serious, the ones where, you know, there is a possibility that you can escape, you know, alive and without serious injury, what can you do at that point? Is there something you can do once it's already coming down?
Well, people always say that when the avalanche comes down, what do I do? Well, very, very few people are caught by avalanches that they don't trigger. So the avalanches just don't come down from above without
right.
warning. I mean, it's very rare, rare. So in 93% of avalanche accidents, they're triggered by the victim or somebody in the victim's party. So that means, just like Pogo said, we've met the enemy and he is us. So mm-hmm. we're triggering avalanches. That's actually good because it means that we have a choice. We can stay out of avalanches if we want to.
And so we have just about a minute left here, but what is, you know, the gear that you need to take with you when you go into the backcountry? And do you find most skiers are taking this gear, or are there quite a few who are still not being as careful as they should be?
Well, there's lots of different user groups that use the backcountry, and skiers are just one of them. Snowmobilers are a big group, snowshoers, Boy Scout groups, hikers, hunters, you know, all kinds of people. Use the backcountry. So the kind of things you should do before you go in the backcountry is, number one, get educated. You can just go to our website, utahavalanchecenter.org, and just go to the education tab and watch the Know Before You Go video, which is very exciting. So that's a good start. And then there's a long list of avalanche classes. Also, anybody that's going to the backcountry should carry basic rescue gear, beacon shovel probes, and then there's a lot of new gear these days. Avalanche airbag packs, they work very well. Avalungs. So, be prepared with equipment and be prepared with education.
We've been speaking with Bruce Trimper. He's director of the Utah Forest Service Avalanche Center, and we've been talking about avalanche danger with a few fatalities seen this ski season so far. And Bruce, thank you very much for joining us for City Views here on KCPW. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm Jeff Robinson. I've been filling in for Jennifer Napier-Pierce on the program today. City Views is a production of KCPW News. Thank you to Tamara Kemsley and Katie Sheen-Abbott. Jesse Ellis is our technical director, and Ryan Cron composed our theme music. You can check us out online at kcpw.org to continue the discussion. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter as well. Next time on the show, corporate philanthropy and how and why Utah businesses give back. Join us for that conversation tomorrow morning. For City Views, I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.